Welcome to Cloudlandia,
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Jackson.
Here we are.
I sent you something that unfortunately I sent it, and then I realized I hadn't provided the link to the thing that I wanted you to see. So you'll probably look at it after after we're finished here today. But I came across it. Actually, I was listening to Pandora, and it was a really great song. And I went over and I looked up who the singer was, and it was Chuck Berry with a song, You Never Can Tell. And, what's so great about it is I left the music playing because Babs was listening to it. So I went to my laptop and I put on my headphones. And I went to YouTube and I found a really, really great YouTube video of quite a young Chuck Berry, like 60s Chuck Berry. And it was just really, really great. And then on the, when you go on YouTube, you get
videos.
Yeah. You get there's endless numbers of tracks you could follow through. So I was just going through and I hit Willie Nelson and I hit Roy Orbison. And then I came across this really, really strange video. And it's Vladimir Putin singing I Found My Thrill on Blueberry Hill. And it's actually Vladimir Putin with like a Russian orchestra behind it. And he's singing with somebody else. He's got, some other singers to fill it in for him.
Right.
And I said, oh, this is a mainland Cloudlandia crossover song.
Oh, there you go. That's so funny.
And I said, oh, this is really creepy. This is really, really creepy. And I said, this would be like Hitler singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow. It'd be like...
Oh my goodness. That's so funny.
Yeah. So,
I can't wait to see it now. That's funny. I haven't even looked at my emails today.
Great.
So
I went back and corrected the first email. So I sent it again with the link. So you'll be able to enjoy it. But it kind of shows you how you can combine worlds these days.
Oh, man, exactly. Yeah, this is just, I had a really great, and it's one of the things I wanted to talk about today, actually, is I found a really great YouTube find that was totally in support of the VCR and Who Not How. And it was Quentin Tarantino, and this was a... Evan Carmichael actually put this video together. He sometimes puts together like top 10 lessons from different, famous people kind of thing. And one of the ones from Quentin Tarantino was explain your vision. That was one of the things. And he tells Charlie Rose this story about a lunch kind of encounter he had with a director, Terry Gilliam, at Sundance. And he was saying to Charlie that this was young in his career, just done Reservoir Dogs, his first movie. Mm-hmm. And he was saying to Terry, Terrence Gilliam, that he was struggling. He said, I've got these visions for what I want to do in my movies. And you have a very, you clearly have a vision and it's right there on the screen. And he said, how are you able to get your, how do you do that? How do you get your vision onto the screen? And, thinking at the time that he needed to know some technical piece of information or some, there's some secret to it. And Terry said to him, he said, well, as a director, he said, you don't have to know how to do that stuff, you can hire people to do that. He said, you can hire a director of photography, a cinematographer who can put your knows how to do to get the right effect or to get the right thing. You can hire a costume director to make the costumes, the wardrobes as, you know, fancy or not as you want. You can get lighting people who know how to do all of these things. He said, you don't have to know any of that. What you have to do is you have to get really good at explaining your vision.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I thought it's exactly what we've been saying, that the key to who, not how, is becoming, I've been calling it practicing the art of what'smanship, you know, being able to describe what you want. And so Quentin said that was the big unlock for him. That for him, he said, when he realized that it wasn't this shamanistic ritual that he had to perform, or this thing, these sets of technical hurdles that he had to overcome, it was just immediately unlocked for him. And he was just excited about it, because he said, I can explain my vision. I'm really good at that. So it's just finding the people to explain it to. And that was the big that was the big difference for him.
Yeah, I made great headway during the last quarter with the new thinking process, certainty, uncertainty, and it seems to me that I've found the bridge that takes people from the 10 times ambition program and strategic coach to the free zone. And so what we're doing now is that we're putting on little workshops for people who say, you know, I'd like to know more about that free zone program that you got. And we said, okay, well, we're going to do a little 2-hour workshop.
It was on one of those.
You were on it. Yeah. Of course, you were on it. Yeah. You and Steve Kreisberg were on it. And but we had them do the certainty uncertainty thing, and I was in a group where everybody just instantly got that the kind of conversation you can have where you let people know the possibility, this what you're certain about and what you're not certain about, and then say, you know, I'm just putting this out there, do you know anything? And immediately people bombard you with connections and suggestions, and I know so-and-so, and this seems connected to something I know. And whereas if you just tell people about your certainty, nobody offers anything because you're certain.
Yes.
And so what I did is... then I had on Tuesday, I had a, not on Tuesday, because I think that was the free zone. I think it was on Thursday. I had somebody who was in the 10 times. It's a lawyer, a woman in Toronto that I've known for 20 years. And, you know, she's in the 10 times program. And I was in a breakout group with her during Thursday's workshop, and it came up that I said, oh, I know a whole bunch of people can help you with that. And I said, could you free up tomorrow morning? Because at 8:00 tomorrow morning, we're going to have the free zone connector call. And she said, yeah, I'd be able to. Well, we'll invite you to it. And I've got a new... You know, I've got a new thinking process that I've created for it. So you'll go through with the free zoners and you'll do a thinking process. And the thinking process is why you're a great who. In other words, instead of saying the great who's you need, identify that you're a great who. In other words, If someone else was doing something, I would be a good person to talk to about this.
Yeah.
Okay, so that would be the thing. So we did that, and then in the second hour, so we did an hour, we did the thinking process, we did the breakout group, and then we took, you know, 2 or 3 minute break, and we came back, and I said, now I've got Kate Dewhurst here, and Kate is going to read through her certainty uncertainty workshop, and she's going to tell you what she's thinking about. And what it is that she's developed the whole approach to medical privacy as the law supports it. And she's really done well in Ontario, in the province of Ontario, where Toronto is. But she said, I now know that I've got 90% that would be good for any jurisdiction in Canada or the United States. And so what I'd like to do is I'd like to go national, and then I'd like to go North American-wide with it. And then I just had the free zone participants. We had about 8 done, and they just bombarded her with this. Well, first of all, you said you should back up a little and just identify who the people are you already have that would love to work with you on your project. And you know, and I know a video person who can do short videos for you and so on. You know, there was about 20 different suggestions. And I got to the end of it and I said, you know, this is really great. We've finally cracked the code on how people immediately will have the experience of collaboration simply because they're willing to communicate their uncertainties.
Yes. Wow, that's really something. You know what I think happens is this ties into on Wednesday, I did the Isle of Marketing Zoom, we do the live Zoom with Robert Cialdini, the author of Influence.
My team, a lot of my team members.
It was so good. It was really good.
Watched it,
And he has developed, a new factor of influence to go with the original 6. And the 7th is what he calls unity, meaning we're on the same side of something, right? That's a factor of influence. And the way he describes it, what you're saying, one of the examples he gave was that the difference between asking someone for an opinion versus asking someone for advice.
Yep.
Advice creates unity. That now, and it reminded me, I read years ago, Claude Hopkins, My Life in Advertising. And one of the stories that they tell was, he was selling Caudalie or some such lard from back in the day, and the Boston office was having a hard time selling to the commercial bakers. And he said, the company, they sent him out there to settle it, kind of thing, see what's up. And so he went into the largest, the biggest commercial baker in the in the city, and along with the sales head from Boston, and said, "Show me somebody you can't sell." And he they went into them, and he brought with him he introduced himself, and he said, "I'm the advertising manager for Caudalie, and I brought this illustration with me." And so back in the day, they didn't use photography, they were using, painted signs, kind of their painted portrait things. And so he said, now, and he set it up and they stepped back and he said, this is meant to be the perfect pie. That's what this is meant to represent. So the crust and everything is supposed to, and I'd love to get your advice on how to, make this make sure this really represents the best pie. And the guy, you know, all of a sudden now he's on the same side of the desk as Claude in a way, right? Same side of the team where it's, you know, I'm recruiting you to help me make sure that this is conveying the message that we want to convey. And the, you know, as opposed to asking his opinion. And Robert and I talked about this. I told him that story and we were talking about the idea of asking for someone's opinion almost puts you, if he'd asked for his opinion, he would have been asking for his opinion as a baker representing all the bakers behind him, kind of thing, mm-hmm. right? Saying, if I can win you, then I win the others. But now bringing him over to his side and asking for his advice changes the tone of the mm-hmm. collaboration now that you and I together are collaborating with everything, with what you're certain about and what I'm certain about, the way you say this now. It makes sense. Yeah. It's a mm-hmm. really important distinction of influence, getting somebody.
Yeah, well, the thing that I found the blockage that prevents entrepreneurs from doing this. In other words, from entrepreneurs saying, here's four or five things. I've got this new possibility, and I think it'll be amazing if we can pull it off. And I've got five things to kind of support where we're going. But I've also got five things that I just don't know. You know,
right.
I don't know if this is really possible. And I said, what I think it does is it separates, and this is very worrisome for entrepreneurs, that if I say I'm uncertain, that means I'm not a confident entrepreneur.
Right. Said, that's exactly.
And I said, no, doesn't say that at all. What it means is that you're actually a confident entrepreneur, because you can say, you know, I deal with taking things that are uncertain and turning them into certainty. That's what my business is. And I'm just in a project right now, and I want to tell you what I figured out about this. So this is the vision of this. I mean, if we pull this off, this is really big. And we got a lot of evidence that mm-hmm. Would support it. When that's allowed me to do is just to identify everything that's uncertain, which is beyond my expertise. And I just want to, I've really nailed down what's inside my expertise, and I'm really confident about this, but that's allowed me now to identify all the things that I don't know, all the resources I don't have, the capabilities I don't have. So, Can you think about this and tell me, you know, some mm-hmm. ways that you know that already exist that I don't know that would enable me to move forward on this?
Yeah, isn't that something? And then immediately, if you look, you're immediately going to be sharing from your bank of certainty. Excuse me, and then your capabilities that could add to this will be illuminated. That's mm-hmm. brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the thing about it, I said, here's my goal for a year from now. So this was on Thursday when I did the certainty uncertainty, and I had about 50, you know, I had about 50, 10 times entrepreneurs in. I said, here's my goal for you that a year from now, and you've had a year of actually expressing your things that you're excited about in this particular thinking process. So you write down what the possibility is, you write down everything that's certain about it, and then you write everything that's uncertain. A year from now, when you're only certain about something, you feel very vulnerable. But when you see both sides, both the certainty and the uncertainty, you feel very confident.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's especially when you feel when you're in a collaboration where one of your uncertainties was just checked on a box into certainty.
Yeah,
that's a really interesting thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is.
I said, now let's fall back and look at who, not how. So on the certainty column, do you have who's who could just take now what you know is true and run with it? In other words, we can make real progress. And on the uncertainty side, then you're looking for who's who really have a handle on something that you don't. You know, they really have that. They do that. So I said, maybe the only thing you have to do is write this sheet and tell a lot of people about it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really, I mean, it's kind of, I love, you know, and it fits so perfectly in with this, along with the guideline of what are you certain and uncertain about is what do you have and not have? What do you, because that's ultimately what would come out of that, I guess, then is what do you have? What do you not have? Where we looked at the idea of, we did the exercise in the free zone of your VCR assets.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've done, when I look back over close to 77 years, let's say I'm looking back 70 years, because, there's a first 4 or 5 years are really unconscious. You know, I really don't have a lot of memory about it. But I've got at least 70 years in when I can look at how I went about things. And I would say 20 of those years I was doing unnecessary work.
Unnecessary what?
Work.
Oh, yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
Because I was trying to do it all on my own.
Yeah, you were trying to be a self-milking cow. That's right. Right? Milking yourself and pasteurizing it and take it to market, all of it.
But it all curdled.
Yeah. Oh, man.
It wasn't even good cottage cheese when I got finished with it. It was like... beyond expertly good cottage cheese, you know.
Dan, is I when I was explaining the concept of the self-milking cow at first, the very first time I explained it, I was talking with Eben Pagan, because it all came to me very, just in a twilight. I had traveled from, I was in the UK, I'd come back to, I was in South Carolina and at Kiowa Island with some friends. We were going to have some golf time. And, I was still on London time, so I was waking up early. But when I was explaining the concept to Eben, we were contrasting it with in the dairy world, in the real world, a farmer would need 100 cows to have a viable dairy operation. But in the cash cow world, the idea cow world, where your ideas are the milk that flows from the brain of the creative cow, the visionary cow, one cow can support 100 farmers. And that's, mm-hmm. I used you as the example, because you think about that is that strategic coach is largely an organization that is, you're the cow for strategic coach in terms of mm-hmm. all of the IP, all the intellectual property, the workshops, all of the things come out of your udders. You're the one that mm-hmm. that you're doing that, but you've got this entire team of farmers this whole farm operation that is 100% suited over 100 people, all taking and multiplying the milk that you're creating.
Yeah, I mean, you really get the feel of that because, you know, I can look at the calendar. So we have a calendar that's just workshops that are being given that day. And, you know, and I've had days where I was doing a workshop and six other American coaches were also doing a workshop that day. Somewhere, you know, and now it's even nowhere because it's
right.
Some of the workshops are virtual workshops.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, I take that as part of my capability that, you know, in the early days, if I did a workshop, it was one person at that person's office, you know, going back to the 80s. And now I can say, I'm putting in about the same amount of effort and I'm doing a workshop. And, first of all, I've got, 50 people in the workshop where in the 80s, I had one person sitting in that person's office. But not only that, we have six other events going. And let's say it's an average of 35. So it's another 210 individuals who are being coached. You know, during the same day that it used to take me the whole day to work with one person, now we're working with close to 300 people.
And, but here's the interesting thing is they're not doing original workshops. They're doing the wake of an original, you know, they're doing the workshop that you've already established. That's the, when you made the original milk, that's create, you know, it's running through and getting pasteurized and homogenized so that other you can, other people can do the same the same workshop.
The interesting thing though is what I've discovered is that if I can confine myself simply to putting open-ended questions in a you know, in a design process, you know, in other words, it's 8.5 by 11. But what's on the sheet are open-ended questions.
Yes.
You know? And therefore, there is going to be original answers.
That's how thousands of people can have a perfectly suited workshop experience. Because that tool is you're bringing your own content to it.
Their experience, their knowledge, you know, their insights, their decisions and everything. And, so consequently, I mean, more and more, I'm just, I've identified, the ability to ask open-ended questions.
Yeah.
Where you don't have the answer. You have a question.
Right. Right.
You know that the other person has the experience so that they can formulate an answer for themselves.
Those are great things. I often ask people, what would you do if you only got paid if you get a result? That's an open-ended question that everybody that immediately shines a light on the thing that they're most confident about. That's the thing that their unique ability is, right? And that's the that's a really great starting point, immediate clarity for people.
Yeah.
And questions are the answers, you know.
It reminded me of something I wanted to bring up with you today. It seems to me that Zoom is an infinitely more creative and powerful social media platform than all the other social platforms put together.
Well, it's an interesting, it's not, I wonder how it's different than us because it's generally, I don't know. I look at Zoom.
No, let me tell you why I think it's different. First of all, I think that when you have a Zoom meeting, it's for a purpose, okay, and that you've screened who you want to be on the. It's not like you're just putting out a message to the universe and then anybody can respond to it. You've already identified and kind of filtered and qualified the individuals who are going to be in the Zoom event, okay? And then the way that I do, you know, the way that we do it here at Strategic Coach and the way that you do it with your Breakthrough Blueprint is that you have a lot of questions. You have a lot of questions, mm-hmm. but you systematize the questions and you have sort of an inkling. If I put the questions in this order,
yeah,
they're going to create some original answers. And then if I get them to do a second answer, their brain is immediately going to start connecting their answers. And they're actually creating kind of an algorithm for themselves. And I don't know what that is. I don't know what their experience is. I don't know what their answers are. But more than that, I don't need to know, because it's only they who need to know what the answers are. And the other thing is that some of the most creative work is done in the breakout groups, which are not recorded. You know, they're not recorded. And people feel, you know, inside this, in our case, mostly 20-minute, 5 minutes for four people, mm-hmm. that they can talk about anything they want to. And that was just their conversation.
Yeah.
Whereas if I'm on one of the other social media platforms, they are recording everything and they're trying to connect it to something that somebody can sell to you as a result of what you said.
Oh, right. I gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. So it's how you use it that turns it, that makes it that way. Uh-huh.
Yeah. But I think that every, you know, look at your events that, what happens in one of your Breakthrough Blueprint workshops is an incredible of new things get created that day.
Yeah.
Where people see a new path of action, they see new connections, they see, oh, I got to make a decision here and everything like that. And mm-hmm. that's their doing in response to your questions.
Right.
That does, yeah. I don't think that happens on the other social media platforms.
Mm-hmm. No, I think you're right.
I think the other social media platforms reinforce what people are certain about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like more direct. The echo chamber kind of thing, right? Where you're taking cues from other. Building on other people.
Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting. I don't think any new knowledge is being created. You know, people can, you know, they can kind of reflect on what they said and everything else, but then that doesn't get shared with the group. There's no sense of, and I think that's why it's boring. It gets boring. Mm. You know, I've talked to people. I said, what's your response to Facebook now after you've been doing it? I mean, some people have been doing it for many years. And I said, what's your response? And he says, well, there's certain people that I stay in touch with, you know, but we're kind of, you know, talking over the back fence, or we're, you know, we're giving our friends a call and we're just mm-hmm. talking about today. But nothing is being created. You know, I don't get a feeling that the medium and the way it's organized invites any creativity. I think it invites what people's entrenched habits are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's mm-hmm. my thought about it. Now, I have to tell you, I'm doing this with complete ignorance of social media because I've never been on.
Well, it's an interesting, my first thought when you said it though, was looking at Zoom as a, more as a tool, because it's not standalone. It's organized like with, my thought initially, like my reflex thought was be similar to saying, you know, that the workshop spaces, like workshop rooms, are the thing. But it's not, it's what happens in the room that makes it.
I kind of get a feeling little companies are being created.
Mm. Say more about that. What do you mean?
I'll stick with your model just to make sure that I'm saying, because I have a thought, this year I will join one of your Breakthrough Blueprint workshops too.
Oh, nice. I like that.
To get the experience. But my sense is that you're bringing ambitious, creative, and cooperative people together, and you're giving them a framework for understanding what they're doing, you know, so that they, my feeling is that without saying so, that you do a really good job of getting them in touch with what they're certain about in relationship to the 8 profit activators.
Yes, that's true. Mm.
But they also, there's a border in each of the activators where they're not doing something that they can hear about others. They can hear it from you. They can hear it from your example.
Yes, that's the whole, that's exactly the magic of it, that they get.
Yeah.
They often have the breakthrough by seeing how something works for someone else.
Yeah.
Because
Yeah. So what I'm saying is that the economic value of, so you have, you know, 12, you have a dozen people and you have Dean Jackson, so it's 13, that in the course from the beginning of each scheduled Breakthrough Blueprint meeting to the end, the economic value of the combined 13 people has gone up significantly as a result of the structure and the conversations that took place.
Right.
But there's nothing in the outside world that would be able to detect that or know it.
Yes, that's true.
It's invisible.
That's the great thing about ideas and clarity of thinking, right? Like when you you think about that, like every, I hadn't thought about it the way you're describing it, but you think about every free zone workshop or every strategic coach workshop, the impact, like for somebody, something was sparked that's going to be the catalyst for a economic improvement in their world. Or their freedoms of time, of money, of relationship and purpose.
Yeah, and really interesting thing happened on Thursday because we, I've had this thought that the, you know, there's been a lot of talk about non-fungible tokens.
Yeah,
you know, in the, you know, the, you know, it's been, you know, couple months now, and you're, we're getting that, and then that's associated with cryptocurrency, and then finally get down, it's associated with blockchain, the blockchain distributed ledger technology. And for me, being a simplifier, I look at the non-fungible tokens and I said, well, this kid's letting off fireworks, you know, this is kind of like, you know, somebody's got a new way.
My immediate thought is tulips. That's what I
tulips.
That's what I keep thinking.
I mean, there were tulip bulbs that were worth the entire economy of Amsterdam, you know.
Right,
As long as you didn't plant them.
Right.
As long as you didn't, it's like the great tulip you know, the bubble, tulip bubble, and then cryptocurrency, people say, cryptocurrency, if you were not into cryptocurrency, you know, you're going to be left behind in the dust. And I said, you know, how is it any different than gold? You know, I mean, Bitcoin, you know, has 21 million, there's like 21 million Bitcoins. And the promise is there will never be more than 21 million, you know.
Right.
I don't know how that's any different than desirable real estate, and there isn't enough of it, you know.
That's it. There's only we're going through so much oceanfront property in Malibu.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. They're selling the scarcity. In other words, you're selling the scarcity. I said, well, people have been selling scarcity forever, you know.
Yeah.
So the fundamental principle. So, and the other thing, it's not a currency. It's an investment.
Yeah.
Technically speaking, there's only one currency in the world, and it's at this time in history, it's the U.S. dollar.
Right.
And the reason is that.
Currency, right.
And the reason is every other currency has valuable more or less in relationship to how many U.S. dollars it would get you if you traded it in. Yeah. And I said, so what the breakthrough is in the world right now is that there's just one currency and everything else is related to that currency, including all the other investments.
Yeah.
But what really interests me is the underlying technological platform that can take a unique thing and give it and actually guarantee that it's the one and only thing that's been created. And we know the owner, we know the conditions under which it's been created. And anything else that tries to resemble this is a phony, and we can know that much more quickly. And it verifies legitimacy. It verifies, you know, authenticity, and I think that's a big thing. So I just dropped. We have a couple of people in Thursday's workshop that I know are into blockchain, and so this one guy, he's a former special forces officer in the U.S., one of the special forces, 15 years in the special forces, and then he got out. And he's really plunged, you know, deeply into Bitcoin. And so I said, Pete, can you kind of tell everybody what this blockchain is? Because I think it's of equal importance. I said, first of all, I think it's entirely a product of the internet, that you couldn't do this unless there was a worldwide internet platform, but in itself, it seems to me that it's going to move things ahead by 10 times if you can instantly trust whether what a stranger is offering you or what a stranger is claiming is actually true, because the blockchain actually verifies it. And he says that's absolutely right. And I said, I think this is a 100 times faster form of intellectual property. And he said, that's exactly right. That's what it is. And I said, the reason I know this is because I brought up this topic with three different, not related to each other, but three different intellectual property lawyers. And they said, no, don't get involved with this stuff. You know, this is a craze. And I said, the fact that they cut me off so fast tells me there's really something in what I'm saying.
There's smoke there.
It's like Sherlock Holmes saying to Dr. Watson, I point out the instance of the dog barking in the night. And Watson says, there was no dog barking in the night. And Sherlock Holmes says, exactly. Something happened and the dog didn't bark. Why is that? They said, because the criminal was a friend of the dog. The dog recognized it as a friend, not as a stranger. So my sense is, and boy, if you suddenly shift worldwide the intellectual property protection of original creativity, original innovation, That's a big deal. That's a big deal. So then in the room, just to finish off my point, there were four other people who were independently investigating and getting in touch with some aspect of the blockchain. And I said, you know what I'm going to do? I said, I'm just announcing it to this group. I'm going to create a special workshop on a quarterly basis And I just have an instant five-person faculty for my first workshop. And we'll let you know about this. And I said, wouldn't this be a great way for us all to learn that there are people who are actually attending who know this, but if we give the right structure to it, and they can explain how they're doing it and telling stories, you know, this wasn't possible before, but this is possible now, and we can do it.
You know, it seems to me, I'll tell you something about this fits, because it seems to me that the, you know, the intellectual property thing, protections like that, all of those laws are harkened back to an analog era where in even property, you know, when real estate, they had the register, the land registry offices in individual counties where you had to go and register in the book. Yeah, the title book. Yep. And you had to, you know, go all the way back and search the registration of the title all the way to make sure it was a clear chain of title. And on the blockchain being digital, the interesting thing that happens is when you first digitize something and first make it, if you were to enter it onto the ledger kind of thing is really what that is, that there's no disputing because it's time stamped of when it gets in the ledger that you could zoom back and look at the film. And this idea or this concept or this expression was first entered into the ledger on this date at this time. That's really, and they declared ownership of it at that time. That seems to me that's really what the blockchain can do.
Yeah, and it's just that it can be the title to anything.
Yeah.
Something that you just created 5 minutes ago, you can get the title for it. So, and the reason why I'm thinking it is that what has made the mainland prosperous, and it's mainly the prosperity in the world. There really was never prosperity in the world until starting around the 1300s, 1400s. I mean, there were people who controlled large amounts of land, you know, but they did through force of arms. And starting around 1300s and 1400s in Northern Europe, so these would be Northern Germany, parts of Scandinavia, Denmark, Holland, and then the British Isles, especially the British Isles. Private property started to become a really, really big thing, and they had what we would consider fairly up-to-date ways of measuring and recording and, you know, putting it in the book, as you said. And my feeling is all of a sudden, once you have this authenticizing of private property, the economy takes off. The economy, the British Isles takes it off. And the United States, of course, is the great example of that because there was so much property.
Yeah.
And the Indians, you know, I mean, I have conversations with people. Yeah, but look what they did to the Indians. And he said, you know, they didn't catch up with where the world was going because, you know, I remember Tecumseh was a very famous Indian chief, Canadian Indian chief. And he had created the, you know, a whole network of affiliated tribes to fight against the fight against the French and fight against the Americans. And one of the generals who actually became President Harrison did a deal with the Miami tribe, which is kind of Ohio, sort of Ohio. And he bought, you know, they bought like 50,000 acres or 100,000 acres. They agreed to it, and the money was given to the Indians, and they had it, and it was reported to Tecumseh, and he said, well, why didn't they sell the trees? Why didn't they sell the clouds? Why didn't they sell the wind?
Right.
Because he wasn't grasping. He wasn't really grasping what was happening, you know. And why are these white people coming? And he said, because if we can take your land away from you, they own it. That's why they're coming. So yeah. Property is really, you don't get any sense of personal progress and personal achievement unless the property that you create is authenticated, validated, and protected.
Mm-hmm. That brings to my mind, Dan, the idea, we've been talking about this migration to Cloudlandia.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you were talking about them buying 100,000 acres, I realized in Cloudlandia, the land is free. That if you buy a domain name, that'd be mm-hmm. like you're staking your claim. And when you throw your domain is strategiccoach.com, mm-hmm. that you now can make Strategic Coach as big as you want it to be. Mm-hmm. It's virtually free. Amazon.com started out that same way. Drudge Report.
Yes.
And so the domain name is the staking your claim. This area here is mine. This is where I'm going to house everything. But it's unlimited what you can do within that. And by the way, Dan, I have to tell you, I had a 23-year pursuit come true this week. I have been waiting for a particular domain name for 23 years. And it became available. And I bought it. I am the new proud owner of moneymakingmarketing.com.
Oh, that's great.
That's a great name.
Yeah,
it does what it says on the tin.
MMM.
Money Making Marketing.
Yeah.
Because you can't say those words and not know what that's about.
Yeah.
But it also gives me, I've been looking and waiting for a name that is suitable to build a outside of Dean Jackson brand around. Because basically my whole thing has really been about my personal brand is what drives everything, and all the things are, you know, my Breakthrough Blueprint and my 90 Minute Books is a separate company type of thing. But Money Making Marketing is the... Now, like my strategic coach, I could have other people.
It literally trips off the tongue.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So I'm so like, this is a new era. This is the beginning now.
Yeah. Yeah. You just got titled to a quadrillion acres.
That's exactly right. The Louisiana Purchase.
Can I tell you something about the Louisiana Purchase?
Yeah, I'd love that.
1803, so that's when they paid...
I love your grasp of history.
Yeah, $15 million. The Emperor Napoleon, it was $15 million in 1803 dollars. If you brought the dollar forward from 1803 to 2021 and said, well, in today's dollars, how much did they pay per acre? Today, it's 50 cents an acre.
Oh, my goodness.
It's probably the biggest legal land purchase in the history of the world. You know, 17 states, so 17 American states. And they're really good states. I mean, you can do anything with you can do anything with those states, you know.
Yeah.
The one of the ambassadors was John Jay. John Jay, you know, is a very prominent person. He's a founding father and He's one of the authors, not a major author, of a thing called the Federalist Papers, which were the discussion pieces. And so they got back and they had absolutely no permission. They had absolutely no authority to sign the deal with Napoleon. And they got back and Jefferson, Thomas Jefferson, was the president. And he says, well, he says, I think he says, we're just going to take advantage of a little opportunity here and we're going to get it immediately validated by the House of Representatives and the Senate, which you have to do with deals like that. And everybody just, you know, I mean, if there's one thing the American founders understood, they understood real estate. You know, they grasp of real estate. But you're talking about the virtual real estate, and this is a whole new world. But a lot of what has been discovered about property and property rights and, you know, authenticating boundary lines and everything else is well known. I mean, this is a very, very well known topic. All you have to do now is move it across the threshold from mainland to Cloudlandia, and all the same rules apply.
Looking, Dan. This is what
I mean. Like you could have said, Dean, I've been had my eye on a particular piece of property next to mine for 23 years, and it came up, and now I've got ownership of that piece of land, and it's no different from what you just said.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. Isn't that so? Isn't that funny? But now what you said also about the more we think about like this likening of Cloudlandia as the new land, the new world that we're all migrating to from the mainland, my appetite for understanding the evolution of the mainland is increasing. And I've been, I want to see you might have a good recommendation actually for a documentary or a series on Western civilization, basically.
I'll tell you the person, you know, who's available here in Toronto, who really has a grasp of this is Sasha Kersmer.
And yes, exactly.
And Sasha is the, he's probably, I would say maybe the number one site surveyor private company in, certainly in Toronto, but I think that would make Canada, you know, he would probably be the number one. And the one thing he has that he's acquired the monopoly for all the exact boundary specifications of every single piece of real estate in Ontario.
Wow.
So if you want to find out the exact specifications of the boundaries of the property that you own or that you want to acquire, you go to Sasha's website and you find it out and they'll send you a thing and they get a piece of money from you looking up your property.
That's awesome. Sasha is an innovator. That's the greatest thing. You know, he's also
he's a nine fact finder.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, he's actually, if that's the highest fact finder I've ever heard, he's the first, I believe, the first 90-minute book client when we started the 90-minute book company. We announced it in one of the workshops in the 10 times workshop. He was the first one in line.
Yeah, but it's a really interesting thing that that the secret to the internet's future is property.
Yes, which is really now content is what's property. Yeah, you can say. I mean, that's really it.
Mm-hmm. Well, creativity is property. You know, creativity is property. You know, and that's why you know there's these. There are these services now that will analyze what you're interested in on the internet. and you know, they'll create. Well, Evan's doing this. This is Future Loop.
Loop.
And I said, yeah, but you're using my thinking processes. You're satisfying my need for new information, but what you're capturing is my way of thinking about things, and you're gonna sell my way of thinking things to other people, and I'm not gonna get paid for it.
Mm.
And my way of thinking about things is very valuable property.
Yes, that's true. Yes, that's exactly true. Me too. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's keep our powder dry and keep our, you know, keep our what's really valuable close to the chest for a while.
Keep our powder dry and our conversations lively. That's right.
Yeah. Anyway, this is really, really great. I think there's a lot to be talked about on this particular topic.
I do too. And we didn't even get to dispersion. This is the new era of dispersion. So, okay.
All righty.
This has been great. I always enjoy these. I'll be back same time.
Okay, bye.
Bye, Dan.